Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nerd Stash Show. My name is Taylor Cole and I will be your host today. We are on episode number 83 of this podcast. I actually had to do a double take there because I cannot believe we are that far into this thing, but we are. I am joined by, once again, Mr. Michael Mosley. Michael, how are you doing?
I am doing just fine.
You and I have done quite a few podcasts here lately.
And we've done a few episodes, you know.
Well, we've had a lot of good episodes, though. People have had some weeks off and some episodes off, so I feel like eventually me and you will be able to take a few weeks off ourselves, but we're not doing that today. And we're not going to have some huge freeform conversation about a game this week. We're not doing a Clash at the Stash this week either. We're finally back to talk about gaming news. Here's what's on the docket for this week. Publisher Take-Two has canceled an unannounced Hangar 13 game, and let's just say it cost them a lot of money. I don't know if you saw this story, Michael.
I know of it.
Yeah, it's a lot. We'll get to it, but man, it's a lot of money it costs. But Amy Hennig is working on a new Marvel game. Call of Duty Vanguard has released. And we'll wrap up our show with a brief discussion about next-gen consoles. Some people lately, I don't know if you've seen this, Michael, but I've noticed this online. Some people lately have been saying, like, gaming has been held back by these Xbox One and PS4 versions. And some of those people still believe, or they believe, that it's time to move forward with next-gen consoles. Meanwhile, we also have a lot of people who have yet to get their hands on either one of the next-gen systems. So it's a really interesting situation, in my opinion. I think it's worth a larger conversation about it. Michael, are you ready to go?
Ready when you are.
All right. Let's move on to our first story of the week. As reported by Bloomberg, publisher Take-Two has canceled an unannounced game codenamed Volt from Hangar 13, who previously developed Mafia 3. For this cancellation, Take-Two had taken a charge of $53 million. So that's a very hefty price for a game that we'll never get to see. According to the Bloomberg report, this canceled project, which I'll be calling Volt going forward, had multiple reboots and technical problems coupled with developing a game during COVID. Volt had apparently been in development since 2017, and, quote, was set to feature superheroes competing in online gameplay, end quote. Before we move on to another report about the game, Bloomberg did state that Hangar 13 employees who worked on Volt would be moved to other projects and jobs were safe for now. But that's not all. According to Kotaku, this game was supposed to be a live service third-person action game. Got it right that time. Along with this, it was said that Volt's cancellation impacts, quote, close to 200 people, end quote. Kotaku was also able to add a bit of potential info that may shine a light on what this game could have been about. Here's an excerpt from their report. Quote, sources told Kotaku that one of the unique aspects of the three-player co-op game was tech that could see enemies combined together into more challenging foes. The action was described as arcadey, with tank, healer, and DPS roles, and a lot of traversal, end quote. A spokesperson from 2K also released a statement about this cancellation, and this really was a corporate statement, to be honest with you. So be prepared for that. Quote, Hangar 13's latest project was creatively ambitious and exciting. When we pursue new intellectual properties, we occasionally may encounter situations that call for cancellation. We encourage our teams to pursue their passions and take creative risks balanced against prudent commercial and financial decisions and our unwavering commitment to delivering the best entertainment experiences. We have full confidence in Hangar 13's leadership and development team and believe that they can and will deliver critical and commercial successes in the future. Hangar 13's leadership is working closely with 2K to ensure that Hangar 13 team members continue to do meaningful work, either as part of Hangar 13 or on one of our other development teams, end quote. Michael, what do you make of all this?
Well, this is nothing, unfortunately, new in the gaming industry. Like, this happens all the time. There's so many projects that we won't hear about, like, until, like, 10, 15 years.
After. Have you heard of canceled. One to the scale of the project cost, I guess, is the best way to put it? I mean, this seemed like a big deal for Take-Two here.
I mean, sort of. I mean, Take-Two lately has been throwing money at games. I mean, Red Dead Redemption 2, the latest Red Dead Redemption was like $150 million in budget, and Grand Theft Auto 5 was just as much.
Granted, those games really, they paid for themselves and so much more.
And so much more, yeah.
GTA 5 especially. Like, Red Dead Redemption 2 was so amazing financially, but GTA 5 is the highest, I think it's at least in the top five.
I think it's the highest grossing video game ever.
It's definitely up there, if not the highest. So, yeah, it does feel like Take-Two, they are one of those companies that just throws money into these games and really banks on them just earning it all back, essentially, and some. And usually it does tend to pay off for them.
Yeah. So if the developer is a little known company called Rockstar, they would definitely throw money into the game and into the marketing. But yeah, I think for Take-Two, I think this was the same thing they were thinking, like, hey, Hangar 13 has made some pretty cool stuff. You know, people love the Mafia franchise, even though Mafia 3 wasn't that great.
Yeah. Which I believe is the only game Hangar 13 worked on from the franchise, correct? I think it was just Mafia 3.
I want to say they helped with the...
They might have helped. I was going to say Remasters or something like that.
Definitive, yeah. I think they might have had something to do with that. But yeah, like, they've proven that they can handle open world games, even though, again, Mafia 3 wasn't that great. It was buggy, but it was still pretty ambitious for what it was going for. And it would seem that they were cursed with their ambitions yet again. I think Take-Two might have put a little too much faith in what they were doing. Because, yeah, $53 million, that's not a drop in a bucket for a lot of companies. For Take-Two, maybe, sure. I mean, GTA 5 Online pays for that within a weekend. But, yeah, these are things that we hear all the time in the video game industry, sometimes not until years after a game has been released.
Yeah.
But I would like to know more, or at least some screenshots or something, of what this game is going to be about. Because I think somebody was like brought up, like, oh, it's like Saints Row mixed in with some other game. I was like, you know what? That sounds kind of cool.
I couldn't find that exact report. I saw that somewhere. I wasn't able to find it again before we recorded. But yeah, that sounded very out there.
Yeah.
What was it again? I remember the Saints Row part.
Yeah, it was like Saints Row mixed with something else. I forget what else it was. But I like the sound of it. What I don't like is the live service ordeal.
Yeah.
And I think Take-Two saw the writings on the wall that live services after, what was it? Outband? Something like that. Outriders, after that kind of failed to take off, you know, unless it was going to be a free-to-play game, I think they saw that paid live service games are a bit more risky. And with the reboots and the starting over and the technical issues, I think Take-Two just saw it as, let's cut our losses now, because if you put that much money into the product, have it finished, release it, and the live service doesn't reach, then they're in...
It's even more of a loss.
Yeah, it's way more than $53 million, and that would really tank stock prices.
By the way, it was Cthulhu meets Saints Row.
Ah, Cthulhu.
That's what it was. Yeah, I agree with you. It does sound pretty interesting what this was. I'm not really pumped about the live service aspect. And a few weeks ago, we did have a larger conversation about these live service titles, primarily looter shooters. And just hearing the idea of another one, I was just like,
Yeah, if you're going to do a live service game, you have to make it free to play at this point.
At least right now. Until at least a few games come out and they really knock it out of the park. But I really enjoy Hangar 13. They developed Mafia 3. I really enjoyed Mafia 3. I know a lot of people were a little disappointed by it. They also did develop the Mafia Definitive Edition as well. Okay. So, I really enjoy Hangar 13. I'm a little, personally, I don't know if I am reading too much into this. I might be. I know the Bloomberg report says that everyone's jobs are safe for now. I am a little concerned by the end of the Rockstar spokesperson's statement here, where they were like, Hangar 13's leadership is working closely with 2K to ensure that Hangar 13 team members continue to do meaningful work either as part of Hangar 13 or one of our other development teams. I don't know if I was reading too much into it. I'm sure that this happens all the time in the game industry as well, where dev studios go to help out with other studios.
It does.
The same publisher. So yeah. I might be reading too much into it a little bit.
Well, I don't think you're reading. Yeah, I don't think you're reading too much into it, because this definitely is a big concern. Because these jobs in the industry are quite fickle. Like, you can lose your job within a day, within a week, within a controversy. You can lose your job in the gaming industry. I think what they're really trying to say is that they'll keep employees in Hangar 13 for now, but eventually they'll probably move them to other Rockstar studios or put them on support for NBA 2K or something, you know? They'll probably put them on a support role for a while before they give them a chance to do another game. Or maybe they'll keep a skeleton crew and maybe revitalize that game, revamp it a little bit and change it to something else that's not a live service. So they're definitely going to juggle a bunch of people around. I'm sure a lot of those people are contract, and they're either going to end the contract early or they're just going to move them to other studios.
Yeah. I think the part two, and we were talking about live service, and it sounded a little bit like outrageous to me with the third-person co-op game. And this is from the Kotaku report. Three-player co-op game was tech that could see enemies combined together into more challenging foes. The action was described as arcadey with tank, healer, and DPS roles and lots of traversal, end quote. So, you hear that and you have examples in your head of like, oh, okay. And plus, let's just call a spade here with Take-Two. I enjoy their games. I love GTA. I love Red Dead Redemption. But they have been known to be very greedy when it comes to these microtransactions, pay to win, all that kind of stuff. I mean, just look at the 2K franchise itself. So it's not like this was a studio with this fantastic reputation behind it that was going to make this game. This kind of seemed to me, from just the information we have, is like, I could have seen this going wrong.
Oh, yeah. Like you said, NBA 2K, a basketball game. They
Even
found
GTA
a way.
Online, man.
And GTA, like,
I know you get so much content for free. I understand that. But some of the stuff that they charge, and you go, it's $20 for this vehicle, and it's just insane.
They got people buying. They got people buying shark cards with real life money, buy fake money with real life money. It's like, geez.
Also, understand, like, three topics from now, we're gonna be talking about another developer, or not developer, another studio that does this with Call of Duty. So that is not lost on me. So. We'll talk about that for sure. But it sucks that this project just didn't work out. It does happen from time to time. I think it's better for it to happen now before we see anything like it. Instead of something like, you remember Scalebound?
Yeah. My heart's still broken about that.
Where you'd have that trailer and people are excited about it and then Xbox pulls the plug on it. It really gives it gives everybody that sense of, well, damn, why'd you even show it?
Yeah, I was super hype about that game.
All right, you got anything else to add here?
To be honest, no. Mostly because we don't know much about the game. It sounds generic when you read it.
It probably wasn't, by the way. I'm sure we'll probably learn more as well, because people love to talk about, here's what this project would have been and stuff like that. So I'm sure we'll probably learn more about it.
Oh yeah, there's going to be leaks Yeah, in a couple of months, there'll be leaks about it.
Watch, in a few months, we're going to be really disappointed. Watch it be this really fantastic idea, and it wasn't just this generic-ish live service. But we'll have to wait and see whatever comes out about it. I just hope everything works out over at Hangar 13. Let's move on to our next topic, which is Amy Hennig and Skydance Media. They're working on a new Marvel game. Marvel and Skydance announced the news, saying, quote, "Skydance New Media, the new interactive division of Skydance Media, helmed by award-winning writer and director Amy Hennig, announced today a partnership with Marvel Entertainment to develop a narrative-driven blockbuster action-adventure game featuring a completely original story and take on the Marvel Universe. This marks the first initiative from the new AAA game studio, which was formed by Hennig and Electronic Arts veteran Julian Beek to pioneer a new category of story-focused interactive entertainment, a groundbreaking convergence of games, films, and television," end quote. With our Guardians of the Galaxy episode last week, and all of the Marvel content we're covering right now on Nerds Talk Movies, I really don't want to spend too much time on this, but Amy Hennig is such a legend in the gaming industry that I felt it would be remiss if we just didn't talk about this, at least for a little bit. By the way, if you don't know, Hennig was notoriously known for being the creative lead behind the Uncharted series, I think except for Part 4 and Lost Legacy. So, the original Uncharted trilogy. Are you excited for this, Michael? Also, do you have any predictions for who this game will focus on? Perhaps a certain man without fear that we're currently talking about over on Nerdstop Movies.
I mean, to be honest, I'm not excited for this. It's a cool announcement, but since they just got started, and it takes about 3 years to develop a game anyway, I'm not expecting to hear anything about this game until at the earliest 2024 is when we might get a cool looking trailer for it. Yeah. But with Insomniac, Spider-Man and Wolverine, you know, within the next year and two, no, I'm not too excited about it because I feel like
that's where the excitement should be.
Yeah, like I have excitement placed somewhere else. Yeah, like it's cool, and I'm glad they got someone who knows a thing or two about cinematic action adventure games, because the first three Uncharted games are just absolutely amazing in my opinion. And yeah, I think she deserves the recognition for her for what she's done within the industry and what she's done with Insomniac. Naughty Dog.
Yeah, I don't mean to create this tangent. Were you not a fan of 4, or were you just trying to just point out what Hennig's worked on?
No, I'm just pointing out what she worked on.
Okay, yeah, I'm just curious.
No. Yeah, I liked 4, and I liked
Lost Legacy.
And I liked Lost Legacy. I never finished it. I should really finish. I should go back and replay that game now.
That's the only one I need to play, really. I've played bits and pieces of the first of the trilogy.
I even played the 4, Nathan Drake game on PS Vita. That's how much I like Uncharted. I've played them, and she definitely deserves recognition. And this is cool that she can announce that she's working on a Marvel game. But until we figure out who it's about and what they're doing, I don't. Yeah. Now, if it's Doctor Strange, I'm all for it because I would love to see what they would do with a Doctor Strange game.
I think you bring up a good point about not being like overly excited. Because, and this isn't a fault of Amy Hennig, it's just a thing to go like, hey, anything can happen here. This just got announced. Don't go crazy. Don't go overboard. We know everybody's excited, as they should be. But, unfortunately, it's just the way it is. We just talked about a game getting canceled in the last story. I hope this doesn't happen here. It seems like this is a very big project for Marvel games in general, as it should be. I'm very excited for it, especially after the Insomniac Spider-Mans, and we just talked about Guardians last week and how much I personally enjoyed it. And I'm really excited to see where Marvel can go gaming-wise, because I'm starting to feel a little bit like in movies and TV, like it's getting a little, I don't want to say stagnant, but it is what it is. And gaming is something to where I think Marvel could really dive into and do something fresh, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, it makes sense.
I would love to see what Amy Hennig would come up with. Whether it be Doctor Strange, I think that's a very good idea. Also with Daredevil, I think that'd be awesome as well. I don't really have another prediction here. I don't want to say Ghost Rider.
Fantastic Four.
You think it would be like a team-up thing?
With the success of Guardians and the point that people do want multiplayer games with their friends, but also a single-player adventure game, they can probably do both. Who knows what they're going to pull off. But yeah, if they're going to do a multiplayer co-op buddy-buddy game, I really do think Fantastic Four is probably the best choice because I don't think it's going to be X-Men.
It does say a narrative-driven blockbuster action-adventure game. So that's the best part about this is narrative-driven. Because whatever game you want to throw out there, we've had examples of, yeah, this just didn't work out. Usually, whenever we're going for this one focus, this narrative kind of experience, or this cinematic experience, it feels like it works out to me 9 times out of 10. So, I'm pumped for it. I'm not going to get overly excited. I think you bring up a fantastic point, no pun intended for the Fantastic Four there, about getting overhyped for a game that just got announced when we've had literally game we just talked about get it canceled from another publisher with $53 million in play there. So we don't know what can happen here. We're probably years away from it. I do hope to hear more though soon. You got anything else to add?
Nope, that's it for me.
Moving on to our next story we have. We don't have too much to say about this next story, actually. By the time this episode drops, Call of Duty Vanguard will have released. At the time of this recording, also, there aren't too many reviews to talk about, so we can't really do a review roundup either. Are you at all excited for this game, Michael? Or is this a complete pass for you? Meaning you probably won't be picking it up at all. I feel like a lot of people are on either side of that fence, by the way. This feels like one of those games that's like, you're either getting it, or you're just already either looking ahead to Modern Warfare 2 in 2022, or you just don't care about Call of Duty. One of the two.
I enjoyed the Modern Warfare reboot. I thought that was really cool, and actually enjoyed Warzone for a while before, what was it, Black Ops 4 or Black Ops World War 2 or whatever it was came out and ruined Warzone.
Black Ops Cold War.
Yeah, Cold War. When that got released and they smashed it together, Warzone became utter garbage. So I'm just going to wait for Modern Warfare 2 reboot to happen. So yeah, I skipped over the other World War 2 game. I already forgot. You just told me and I already forgot the name of it because I don't care.
It wasn't a World War 2 game. It was a Cold War game, Black Ops Cold War.
Oh, it was Cold War. Well, there you go. See, that's how little attention I paid to it. I mean, it's in the title, and I still don't care. So, yeah, I skipped Cold War because I do not care about the Black Ops series, and I don't care that they did try to move it. I will give them that. They did try to move on, but I didn't care for that because I don't care for their gameplay mechanic. I don't know why. It never feels right to me. I hated Black Ops 1, 2. I skipped 3, and I hated 4.
I know we've talked about Sledgehammer before, and you weren't a huge fan with... Also, do you put in anything into the fact that Sledgehammer has had, like, a huge turnover? Like, this feels... Like, even though it is Sledgehammer Games, from all the people that they've hired, and it feels like it's been such a huge turnover, this kind of does feel like a brand new studio. Do you take any of that into account when you're like, yeah, Sledgehammer Games just haven't been for me?
I do. You know, I know that there's been shuffles around all studios. But, you know, the game doesn't look interesting to me. And Black Ops definitely looked uninteresting to me.
It doesn't help that all the reports and rumors is like, and it's happening earlier than, like, I think earlier games have been, to where it's been like, yeah, sure, Vanguard's coming out, but next year is Modern Warfare 2. Everybody's saying, like, there's reports of a morale system, kind of like Red Dead Redemption 2 in the campaign. There's talk about, like, what certain gameplay mechanics will be like. And all that stuff's coming out now. So it kind of feels like for the people like you, Michael, who are like, yeah, this looks very uninteresting. it's really easy to look ahead to Modern Warfare 2 or whatever Infinity Ward ends up making. I'm pretty sure it'll just be called Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it will be too. Yeah, and that's the thing, because they did such a great job with the Modern Warfare reboot. You know, it just like the first Modern Warfare, it's when they had a new engine. They pushed Call of Duty forward a little bit. That was cool. That was awesome, and it felt different. It felt fresh. And the Modern Warfare reboot did the same thing. They got a brand new engine. It felt new. It felt fresh for Call of Duty, not for first person shooters in general, but for Call of Duty. That's what you want. After a while, you want something fresh. And the multiplayer was good. Warzone was good. You want that back. So yeah, I'm waiting for Modern Warfare 2 reboot. That's what I'm gonna keep calling it the reboot. I'm waiting for that one. And I don't care for Vanguard. So yeah, Vanguard is a big skip for me, even though I have been watching it. I'm more excited for Battlefield 2042 than I am for Call of Duty.
I get you. And like I said, when we were talking about, like, I guess the blurb that we have for all our show notes here, is it feels like people are either on that one side or the other of the fence. Like, they're either looking ahead or just like, whatever, about Call of Duty this year. Or it is like, oh yeah, I'm pumped for it. And strangely enough, I feel like I'm somehow in the middle. It's like, I'm looking ahead to Modern Warfare 2. But also, there's parts of Vanguard that are a little interesting. For example, I really love the zombie stuff, and Treyarch is behind that this year. And not only that, you have the Modern Warfare reboot. I'm going to use your terminology here, Michael. You have the Modern Warfare reboot engine being used for Vanguard, which is something I really wish they used for Black Ops Cold War. But at the same time, for whatever reason, it does feel like I look at that World War II setting and I go, I have played this kind of game so many times. And you look at the past few years and there's no evidence for it. Like, I don't even know why I feel this way. Like, I think it's just it's Battlefield 5 and it's Call of Duty World War II. And I think those are the only two World War II games to release in the past, like, I want to say nearly a decade.
Yeah.
But I still feel so like, all right, well.
It still feels played out for some reason.
World War II? Yeah. Is it because of the early, I don't want to get into a big conversation, but I kind of want to. Is it because of probably the earlier Call of Duties, maybe, in World War II, which, or World at War, was a largely well-received game as well?
I think it feels kind of stagnant, or it feels played out by now, because we're so used to customization, and you're used to crazy weapons that you can do with modern warfare games, or even future warfare games.
And that's so weird in World War II settings.
Yeah, it is.
But let's move on to our main topic, Michael. Are you ready to move on to our main topic? Did you have anything else to add?
Oh no, I said my two-bit.
Usually this is where I go into a long spiel about a particular topic to give context to it, or to like set the tone for whatever we're going to talk about. I try to base these, by the way, off of like a YouTube essay you have, so hopefully it comes across that way. We're not going to do that this week, though. Instead, I just want to have this brief discussion about next-gen consoles. And why aren't we doing a huge intro about it? Well, let's be honest here, everybody who is listening to this podcast right now, I can pretty much guarantee you probably know about most, if not all, the issues when coming to trying to find a next-gen console, whether that be the shortages, the scalpers, or even the irritating technical problems that come up when you're trying to actually buy one of these things. I'm looking at you, Walmart. There has been a lot of talk recently about games being held back by Xbox One and PS4 consoles. But at the same time, and as I just brought up, everyone also knows about the next-gen console shortages that may be continuing into late 2022 and maybe even 2023, which would be really unfortunate. So, Michael, let's talk about this ourselves. Where do you stand on the whole current-gen systems holding back games? Do you think it is time that gaming moved on to next-gen systems? Do you think we need to wait a little bit longer for people to get their hands on next-gen systems? Where are you standing on all this?
I do think it's time for us to move forward. I think more of the games that have been announced now should have been on next-gen, just like the Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. That's going to be next-gen only. Not even next-gen, current-gen. It's been over a year now. It's current-gen.
A lot of places I've noticed are still calling it next-gen, and they're calling the Xbox One and PS4 current-gen. I agree with you. I'm just trying not to confuse people, and that feels like the best way not to confuse people.
Okay. Well, I'll just call it new-gen then. I have a PS5. I was able to get one on launch day. Super hyped. Couldn't get my hands on the Series X. Couldn't secure the bag, as they like to say. I'm still trying to get an Xbox Series X. Sure, I can get a Series S, but I don't want that. I already have an Xbox One X. Why do I want a Series S? I want the latest, greatest, the biggest, best. So yeah, I'm still trying to get my hands on the Series X. And I do have a PS5, so I am going to be one of those people who are like, well, I got my hands on one, so I would like to see more next-gen specific games. But I also get it. I get it. Thanks to this shortage, I understand more games releasing on old-gen systems. I do.
Like,
I
if we were it. At... The just interrupt, because I know you're in a long spiel here. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, you go ahead. That.
But... Even if we were talking about, like, last gen, for last gen, like the Xbox 360 and the PS3 to the Xbox One and PS4, it feels like we would already have moved on. I don't know if that's what happened, but yeah, with the shortages, it's just one of those very complicated subjects where it's like, we should be, we're not, I understand why we're not, but it feels like we should be moving on right about now.
Yeah, it's strange, you know. You still feel like the Xbox One and the PS4, PS4 Pro, those are gone. Those are the old days. We want 4K. We want at least 1440 60 frames, you know? Like, we want games to push 1080 120 frames. We want to see that stuff, but you can't because a lot of the resources is split between Xbox One, PS4, Xbox One SX, PS4 Pro, and then you have Xbox Series S, and then you have the PS5 and Xbox Series X. So that's just so many different SKUs for these developers to work on that they can't just focus on one thing, on the strengths of the Series X and the PS5. They have to focus on these other ones because nobody has a Series X or PS5 because bots and scalpers buy them all out. And if you have next-gen games, well, you may not sell as many. No, that's not even may. You're not going to sell as many as if you brought it on last old-gen and new-gen. And unfortunately, I think for the next couple of years, we're stuck with cross-gen games. And I don't blame publishers for doing it like that. I think we'll start seeing specifically new gen only games more frequently around 2025.
That's a long time.
It is.
I think it's a little, I agree with you. I think it's going to be probably about 2023, 2024 when we'll see, like, okay, we're done with the One and the PS4, like, completely. I don't think it'll be that late, but I 100% agree with you when, because it is not a clear cut, like, all right, yeah, let's move on. Like, we're tired of you last gen people, or whatever you want, current gen people, whatever you want to call it, who just don't want to get the next gen consoles, and we want our fast load times and our upgraded stuff and our those additions of the game, and we want developers to spend time on that. Because the reality of it is, a lot of people haven't had a real shot to get a next-gen console yet.
Yeah.
And that really sucks. And yeah, a variety of reasons why we haven't is just, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I see why people have been able to get their hands on it. But also, I do kind of agree with people that is, it feels like it should be time for us to move on. You look at a lot of these games and what they're able to do with, for example, these Series X upgrades or something like that. And my first thought is, oh my god, this is great. What if they just had to worry about this and not even on the other edition? Like, how much better could that be?
Yeah, and that's going to be on everybody's mind for a long while. Yeah, sure, we get some of these next-gen upgrades kind of updates. But, like, I want to see games specifically made with the SSD drive, with the SSD involved. I'm sorry.
The SSD
already being implemented. I want to see the ray tracing being implemented. I want those options. Like, I get those options on my PC. And now that my consoles can do it, I want those options. I want to see those things. I want to see performance mode.
Everybody with a next-gen console has become a PC snob.
What?
I just took a shot at everybody who plays on PC. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, in my defense,
you get to play on PC, so you know what? Some jackass talking into a microphone says something about the way you play video games.
Yeah,
you can deal with it. You're fine.
And in my defense, I really got into PC gaming around about 10 years ago. I've been mostly console, but I got my first gaming PC. I bought it from a buddy who was upgrading his and was getting rid of his old one. I was like, I'll buy it off of you. And, like, I started seeing the cool benefits of it. It's like, oh, this is kind of cool, especially now that you use your Xbox and PlayStation controller with your PC. So it's a controller I'm already familiar with. I don't have to worry about these cruddy knockoff Logitech level ones. But, yeah, I see how cool it is. And now that I'm an adult and I have money and I can buy these things, like, cool PCs. Yeah, I think it's cool. I like it. I like the RGB for no reason and my mouse and my keyboard. Like, why do I need that? I don't, but I think it's cool. I love it. And I would like to see my consoles going that far. I would like to see these stupid little things in there. I would like to see them become so powerful that I can,
as much as they can. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be able to play around with the settings. I want to change it to high res, no ray trace, or mid res, with ray trace, 120 frames or 60 frames. I like that. I think it's kind of cool. And we're not going to get that with the PS5 and the Series X for a good 2-3 years because we can't get our hands on these next systems.
Yeah, and I want to bring this. I don't mean that this is going to be a little self-promotion here, but I reviewed NBA 2K22 for next-gen consoles for thenerdstash.com, and I loved it. I thought it was amazing. I then played the last-gen version. And it's good. It's all right. And there's a lot of improvements from the previous 2K for sure that I just really didn't enjoy. But it feels so limited when you play the last-gen version and then go to next-gen. And I apologize if it feels like I'm being that person.
No, you're not. Because
of some people who are like, hey, I haven't had a chance to get a next-gen console, so it feels like you're just complaining about first-world problems here, essentially.
Well, it is.
It is,
but still, the point is that it's a podcast about video games.
It feels like it's doing a disservice, in a way, to even last-gen players to me. Where it's like, yeah, it's good, but it feels like you're getting this way better product. For not every game, mind you, and it's not every game who has this massive upgrade, it feels like, but for some of the games I've played so far, where it's like, yeah, the last gen version, it just feels like I would feel cheated.
Yeah, and you know, it should feel that way because these new gen systems are supposed to be so much more powerful that it feels like you're upgrading. Look at Battlefield 2042. You get more player count on a PS5 and Series X than you will on the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X.
That's a big deal, honestly. And I know that's something somebody might scoff at, but it is true, though.
Yeah, that's a,
like,
that's
even
a pretty,
just something as simple as that player count.
Yeah, it's matters. Like I'm paying the same price that this guy bought on an old gen system, but I bought the same thing on the new gen, and I'm getting a better product. Because my system is stronger, so devs can do more with it, and this shows it. It's like, yeah, we can put more players on the screen. We can have bigger matches and bigger teams on these huge maps. Because I played the 2042 beta on my Xbox One X. I downloaded it for my PS5, but I didn't get around to play it on my PS5. And playing that game on the Xbox One X, I was like, my goodness, this is blurry. This looks awful. I know it's just a beta, but I know when this game launches, the Series X is going to show its age. And now that DICE confirmed that, yeah, if you have a new gen system, player count is going to be bigger and better. Yeah, I want the game on PS5 and Series X. I don't want it on Xbox One X anymore.
Yeah, I get you. I think what I would like to see happen is, I don't think now is the time. I really don't. Like, I think ideally it should be, but considering the circumstances of the situation here, it's not. Not everybody, like, it feels like you mentioned earlier, Michael, it feels like publishers and developers would be losing out on so much money if they did that. And there's no reason for them to do that. But I feel like once we get into that late 2022, 2023, you mentioned the Suicide Squad game, which, that, to me, from what we've seen so far, I'm not expecting that to come out in 2022. So, that's something I would probably expect to be that next-gen only game. So, I feel like right around that time frame is when we should just be like, alright, well, hopefully everything gets smoothed out. Hopefully a lot more people get their chance to get one of these things if they want one, or they move on to the PC. Moving on to our next section. We're done. Never mind. We don't have a next section. That was our main topic. So let's talk about what we're working on. Where can people find you? Michael, what are you working on? Where can people find you?
I am currently studying up on a couple of things in Adobe Suite. So I guess I'm going to try to do some cool stuff with that. Other than that, I am not working on a whole lot. But you can find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. And if you find a weirdo in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place.
You can find me on this podcast here. You can find me over on Nerds Talk Movies. Our latest episode of Nerds Talk Movies was a season 2 retrospective of Daredevil. Other than that, I guess let's close up shop. If you like this podcast, you can check us out on Twitter and Discord. Links to both of those are in this episode's description. We're available on pretty much every podcast and platform. New episodes of this show will arrive every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, apologies for the late upload for the Guardians episode. Just took a little bit of extra time for me to piece it all together. Finally, be sure to check out thenerdstash.com. We have so many awesome people over there churning out news articles, reviews, opinion pieces, lists, stuff like that. Whether it be video game news, movie news, TV news, comic news. We have stuff there that people should really enjoy. Thank you, Michael, for joining me. Thank you, anyone, for listening in. We will see you next week.